So, I guess we'll call to order the...
Microphone.
Sorry.
I'm usually good about the mic, too. Okay, so I'd like to call to order the Redevelopment Authority Citizens Committee for Monday, March 5th, 2018. Can we have roll call, please?
Chairperson Cardinal.
Here.
Vice Chair Justice. Member Barrett.
Here.
Member Hanneman.
Here.
Member Kennedy.
Here.
Member Powell.
Here.
Member Smith.
Here.
A quorum's present.
Thank you. At this time, I'd like to open up for any public comment to discuss any topic relevant to or within the authority of the Carson City Redevelopment Authority Citizens Committee, including a matter that's not specifically included in any agenda item. So, any public comment from either of the two of you out there in the audience today? Okay, so no public comment. I'll move to item number three for possible action approval of the minutes from February 15, 2018.
I make a motion to approve the minutes of, what was the date? February 5th, 2018.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Unanimous? Okay, we'll get right to it. So meeting item agenda 4A for possible action to make a recommendation to the Redevelopment Authority regarding the expenditure of $5,000 from the fiscal year 2018 special event budget of the Redevelopment Revolving Fund for rental of special event tents and facilities rental for the Carson City Fair at Fuji Park. Lee.
Okay, thank you. Good evening. Lee Plowell, Community Development Director. Just to give a little bit of background for this first, this one's, you probably recognize sort of this application coming forward. This is, actually relates to the request that came to you a couple months, well, was it just last month, for the tent purchase. So since that RAC meeting regarding the tent purchase, we had some discussions with the Parks and Rec Department, city management, about actually owning and managing and the liability that goes along with owning the tents. And there needs to be more discussion related to that on a bigger picture level with Parks and Rec about how they are managing and allocating things for special events for private parties, with the conclusion to that being in the short term that we don't want to buy a tent and manage that. So they got the direction to kind of come back and redirect this request and allow the applicant to come forward for a special event funding to, because now they're back to renting tents for the Carson City Fair in 2018. A little bit about the timing of this application. So, as noted in here, the special event, the first round of special events for this current fiscal year, the applications are accepted in last April, comes to RAC in May, goes to the board in June, and that's for this fiscal year's funding. There was two projects funded for a total amount of $14,000 with a $30,000 budget. That leaves $16,000 that can be allocated at the discretion of the Redevelopment Authority for other applicants that come forward. This, even though the fair is in July of this year, which means it's in next year's fiscal year, there's expenditures, there's some overlap in the expenditures, and they need to provide deposits to the tent rental company and the facility. So those expenditures that occur in this fiscal year need to come from this fiscal budget. So that's why this request is here now and not with others for next year. It's a request for $5,000. $3,000 of which pays for the tent rental, $2,000 of which would go towards facilities rental. Lindsay Chichester with the Cooperative Extension is here to answer any questions you have. This is you'll be making a recommendation on this, and we'll bring it to the Redevelopment Authority and Board of, you'll bring your recommendation to the Redevelopment Authority and Board of Supervisors.
Okay, thank you, Lee. Lindsay?
I guess it's just on. Lindsay Chichester, Cooperative Extension. Thanks for having me back.
Thank you for coming back. I have a question to start. Did my recollection, don't we already own tents as a city? And didn't we have some already and we're looking to get a new one? So I'm just wondering why all of a sudden we feel we're not in a position. And I know this came up last time because I said, it takes a lot of practice and a lot of labor to put up these tents, because I do it all the time. But I'm a little confused. Don't we have tents already, and why did we choose not to go ahead and buy another tent versus going the rental route, I guess?
So the city has a tent that was used for the ice skating rink. So I'm just passing along, basically, this is secondhand information, because I've talked with the Parks and Rec director about this, and Lindsay may actually know a little bit more about the tents they have. I haven't talked to them.
All the information I have is via email, and I think we were both received that one.
Yeah, so they have a tent that actually, in my initial conversations before the RAC meeting, with that a new tent would have replaced the tent that was used for the ice skating rink, and which has apparently got overused in it, so that's reached at the end of its life. So I don't know the inventory of other tents that the city has for events.
Okay.
Because I don't think with Fuji Park it sounds like all the event tents come from rentals for events at Fuji Park.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
That's correct.
So I guess, you know, I'm always of the mindset, if we're going to spend the money on it, it's better to own it than to keep renting and going on down that road. So I'm still a little bit confused on if we have a tent. I mean, I understand the condition of the tent, and we needed a new tent, and that's, I think, why we authorized a new tent. Why we're able to put up that tent, but we're not able to put up, I mean, I'm a little confused on that. Do you follow me?
Yeah, but I think that's right. So the city has gone out in the past and put up tents for events. Thought is, do we still want to be in that business of spending taxpayer dollars going out and putting up event for tents? I don't think if we're going to solve that issue today, I think it's a discussion that needs to be had with the Board of Supervisors, facilities, and the management of that. But that's exactly the issue, and the city definitely has done in that in the past, and I'm not sure that's something the city wants to continue to do or is going to continue to do. I think that's for a bigger discussion.
If I could weigh in here also, the two tents that they had at the ice skating rink, not only are they sort of past their prime, but they're very small. I happened to notice, I was down on my usual Saturday trek to Costco, and happened to notice that there are many more trees down this year that they cut down than ever. So you don't have the shade that you had in the past. And the big tree over in the by the dog area is gone completely. So you really need a tent for the animals. And that is a much, much larger tent. And from what I understand, that it takes a lot of manpower to do this, as you well know. And the city just doesn't really want to get into that rental business. In fact, they're trying to get out of the chairs and the tables and everything else. So I think that's why. And if you want to save the animals, that's a good way of putting it, you know, you're going to need some kind of a tent, unless you have a tent. Do you have a tent?
I have a couple tents, but they might be in use in July. So any other?
Yeah, I just weigh in for a minute. There's been no formal move towards anything, but I think that is the concern, is not the cost rental or purchase, but the cost of the city manpower being involved, because that's no longer RAC money, that's general operating, general fund money. So I think they're thinking about weighing which way to go, because use of resources, use of human resources as well as financial resources. But we haven't had that discussion, so it's just the ball's just beginning to roll down that. Hope it doesn't turn out to be a gutter ball. But
thanks.
I have one more comment, and I'm wondering if maybe if there was a number of uses for the tent throughout the years, if we purchased the tent, sorry, Lindsay, you know, for going backwards here, but you know how we had the big discussion about closing the streets and the whole bit, and then RAC went ahead and said, okay, I think it's $25,000 or whatever that goes to the city for the closure of the streets at the time. I'm wondering if RAC could just go ahead and put in some labor monies for a tent up and down, or is it more than that? So I just want to throw that out for discussion.
Okay. I think, is there, I heard potentially maybe a liability issue as well with the setting up, because it is a very labor-intensive process to do that, so.
I think you heard correctly, and we're into the chicken-egg part of the discussion here, so I don't know whether we can solve it now, but yeah, opening that dialogue is good.
Let me ask this question. So, John, if you mentioned it's an operation budget item, why can't, if we were to get out of the business of renting tents and purchase them, why can't maybe the city employees or the park and recreation commission employees could actually set those tents up?
I think that's the issue. The issue is using operational monies that are paid as salaries when those people can be used for other things. I think that's where it's coming from. But as I say, that discussion is just getting started, so I don't know. You got anything to say on that, Lee?
No, I was just going to say along those lines that's a possible solution for a discussion. I mean, I think that should be part of the discussion, but I'm not sure on behalf of the Parks and Rec staff and Public Works staff that it's just a matter of money. It might actually be a matter of staffing and the time and what they're doing, not being able to do other things. So I think that's certainly something we'd bring up in the longer-term picture of addressing this issue.
Well, I would think that you could probably solve that by, if it's not the individuals that you're short of and it's a money thing, then embed that labor cost in the rental of the tent, and you're kind of good there,
right,
from that perspective.
Yeah, I heard what Ronnie said, if the money came from RAC. But it's still time. It's a very lean staff, I think, is the thought. So when the time's gone, you're spending money one way or the other, but the time's gone and they're not doing something else. I think that's what's on somebody's mind. But it's just a beginning talking point. So we should make these points and then send them up the line.
Okay. Any other questions from the board? Lindsay, you're good?
I'm good.
Okay. Thank you.
I think it's been covered.
I have one more question. Lindsay, are you planning on coming back for more money this year?
No, not this year.
This is all you're going to have? I mean, this is for this coming...
Correct. It's for the 2018 fair.
Fair, right. So mm-hmm. You're not coming back for any more money? Last year you got $10,000.
Right, which went to tents and rental at Fuji Park for the 2017 fair.
Right, so this is it.
Our goal is to eventually become sustainable, that we don't have to come back. But until we get to that point, we need assistance still.
I love that goal.
I do
guess
too.
What? That's our goal as well.
Yes.
Okay. Does anyone want to make a motion, or a motion with some points for moving the ball down John's bowling alley?
Okay. I will make a motion if I can find it here. Where is the motion? To award $5,000 to, where is it here? I make a recommendation to the Redevelopment Authority regarding the expenditure of $5,000 for the fiscal year 2018 special event budget of the Redevelopment Revolving Fund for the rental of special events and facilities rental for the Carson City Fair at Fuji Park.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Discussion. No discussion. Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Unanimous.
Congratulations. Thank you all. Thanks, we appreciate it. At least not here.
Okay, so we'll move on to item 4B for possible action to approve the expenditure of up to $21,579 for facade improvements to the building located at 2450 South Curry Street, Greenhouse Garden Center, with redevelopment area number 2, and to grant a waiver of the policy requiring a minimum of 3 bids for proposed improvements. Lee?
Okay, thank you. As you've read into the agenda, this is a facade improvement application that, we've received. These are submitted on a first-come, first-served basis as long as funding is available. In this fiscal year, we have in the budget currently $100,000 towards facade improvements for this year, $25,000 of which has been previously awarded. This request, as you said, is up to about $21,000. Actually, in the request from the applicant, that's the total with the, that is the total with a non-qualifying portion of it. So the total is in the in the staff report that would be recommended is for $20,329, which excludes some parking lot pavement that's listed in that $21,000. This is for the Greenhouse Garden Center at 2450 South Curry Street. The other thing I wanted to mention about the budget, where I was going with that, so with this application, which is still less than $25,000, if you recall, at the last meeting, you made a recommendation to the board to reduce funding for the facade improvement to $50,000. That wouldn't affect this application. This is still under the budget per the policies are taken. I'm all qualifying on first-come, first-served basis. And that recommendation regarding that reduction is going to go to the Redevelopment Authority on March 5th and Board of Supervisors on March 15th. But either way, that shouldn't affect this application. Just a couple quick points. I did provide some late material. One of them was to page 30. There was a painting bid document that didn't have the total amount on there, so that was provided as late material with the figure that matches the spreadsheet that Mr. Ruff provided. And additionally, I had a question for him about the bid from BDR Construction and matching that up as Mr. Ruff did in the spreadsheet. He broke it down a little bit more fine. He's also requesting a little bit less than what the bid is. The bid actually does break it down by the front and rear portions of the building, and the bid is actually a little bit higher than what is in his request. So you can authorize the funding based on his request. And he has indicated to me and notes in here that he's tried to get more bids on this for a year. He has the bids here, so therefore also he's requesting a waiver from having to get the 3 bids for the project, which means in RAC it has the ability to grant that waiver, which means we would let him go forward based on these bids, and he would be reimbursed, of course, up to this amount and on actual expenses paid for the project based on reimbursements, receipts and reimbursements to us. So Mr. Ruff is here if you have any other questions on the application, and I'll conclude with that.
I have one question for you, Lee. You said, so the application on the action item is $21,579, but you said that's reduced to something from paving. So do you have a new figure that we're looking at? 20,000 what?
So I think it's correct on your staff report motion, third paragraph down, $20,329. Which actually also matches what he has in his memo for the request, but the 21 comes from totaling up the other.
Gotcha. Okay. I'd like to open it up to general public. So, David, if you'd like to tell us all the good stuff you're going to do down there.
Thank you. For the record, David Ruff, owner of Greenhouse Garden Center. As Lee pointed out, we're looking at doing modification to the exterior of the building, and not only are we doing the sides that face the streets of Rhodes and Curry, but we are also on our own redoing the interior sides of the store, as well as hopefully putting up another shade structure since the one we had came down, which isn't in this bid at all. So, looking forward to seeing if I could get a little rack money here and would be able to answer any questions for you.
All right, thank you. Comments?
Any actually, questions? David, I have no questions at all. Were some of these things that you're going to be repairing caused by the flood?
Yes. Yep. And as Lee pointed out, I started trying to get bids last year after the flood damage had occurred. And, you know, over a process of over a year here, it's been exceedingly difficult to try and get three bids to come out for painters, glazers, and just somebody to help with the siding itself. And I really appreciate your understanding here. With, I think we had a total of 15 contractors we called, and we got, I think, 8 to show up and 4 bids. So it's a very exciting time.
Even an up economy causes some problems. Yeah.
Yeah.
Any other questions or comments? I think it's pretty straightforward.
Yeah. Just one question. Mr. Ruff, you did mention that, you know, any help that from the RAC committee would be greatly appreciated. How much of the work have you already done, have done any work that forced the, whether it was caused by flood or what have you, in order to improve the repairs in your business?
Well, so far, what we've managed to accomplish here is taking down the siding on the side of the building here. We're readjusting the electrical that runs around the outside, and then we're going to mount new siding above that so that it is all tucked in to the building itself. So where the flooding ended up having an issue was the debris built up on some of the piping, and some of it was starting to look like it was ready to rust or rot on the conduit. So, you know, we haven't done a lot yet other than buying materials. For siding, yes.
Are you replacing also
We are adding additional insulation between, we're leaving the old siding there, putting insulation in, which is the polystyrene board type insulation with a aluminum foil coating on that, and then we're mounting the new siding to the exterior of that.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you.
It seems quiet up here. I think you made an easy point for us. So,
okay.
Anybody have anything else?
I frankly think this is a no-brainer. You have been a long time.
I frankly think this is a no-brainer. You've been a long time businessman here, have never asked for anything, and I think it's a good expenditure of RAC money. So, that's all I have to say.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ryan. Thank you, David.
Thank you, Court.
Okay. Would anyone care to make a motion?
I will, since I'm such a supporter here. Okay. I move to approve the expenditure of up to $20,329 for facade improvements to the building located at 2450 South Curry Street, the Greenhouse Garden Center, within redevelopment area number 2, and to grant a waiver of the policy requiring a minimum of 3 bids for the proposed improvements.
Second.
Any further discussion? Public comment? Okay, all in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Passes unanimously. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
The whole merger.
One or the other.
Okay, so we have item 4C, our annual chat with our district attorney.
I know you all look forward to this every year. Many of you have already heard my spiel, but I know we've got new members. So I'm here to talk to you about the Nevada's open meeting law, which you are subject to the Nevada open meeting law because you're a public body. Oh, I forgot. Sorry. I just started without even It's going. There we go. Okay. So let me talk about the intent of the open meeting law. So basically, the open meeting law is not intended to cease all communication about what happens within your purview or within your power. But instead, it prohibits this collective deliberation whenever you have a quorum in a public meeting. So you basically have to have, can you go to the next, thanks, Lee.
You want to do it from here.
Oh, can I do it? Do I have a thing? Thanks. That way I will. There you go. I didn't know if you had a clicker. Okay. So, when does open meeting law apply? And basically, it applies when you have two things. You have to have a public body, and you've got to have a meeting. And so, there's a definition of a public body, and that is, you know, you've got to be administrative, executive, legislative, or advisory. You have to expend or disperse, or have to be supported by tax revenue, which that's basically like every public body, I mean, every group that's appointed expends some public money. So everybody pretty much is subject to the open meeting law. And your positions have to be created by the Constitution, by a charter, ordinance or resolution, and then it requires two people. So if you've got two people that expend some public funds, and you're appointed by some public body because you're created in some public authority like the NRS or the charter or even the Carson City Community Code or the Carson City Municipal Code, then you basically are a public body. And then, you know, you have to have a meeting. And so what's a meeting? So a meeting is a quorum of the members of the public body. So here you have to have a majority of your members. If there's a vacancy, then it reduces the quorum by one person. And that could be by electronic communication. So if you're all on email, if you have a quorum via email or teleconference or even video conference, that's a quorum. And if you're talking about whatever you have authority over, then you're subject to the open meeting law. So you've got to have a quorum of the members of your body, and then you have to, one of two things, deliberate among your quorum towards a decision, and or take action. So what does deliberation mean? Well, basically, to talk about anything under your jurisdiction, you're deliberating, reflecting upon reasons for or against some action, any collective discussion, any exchange of facts, any thoughts, feelings, what have you, of anything that you have authority over. That is deliberation. And the action for elected officials, it's an actual vote. But an action for you all could be, it could actually even be inaction, as long as you're deliberating towards something. And even if there's some collective agreement, even if you don't take a vote, that's action. So if you are outside of a public meeting and it hasn't been agendized and you have a quorum, or if you're in an email chain and there's a quorum of your public body and you're talking about something that you have power or authority over, and you come to some kind of a, maybe not a conclusion, but you do deliberate because you're talking about this this item that you have authority over, you just violated the open meeting law. And, you know, sometimes you don't even realize you do until you've, you know, either somebody points it out or you think about it and go, oh gosh, we were totally deliberating and we had a quorum and, you know, maybe we didn't take action, but we did deliberate and kind of come to a conclusion. When does a meeting occur? Again, that's when you have either a serial quorum or a walking quorum or a constructive quorum. All of these are synonymous, so you want to stay away from these walking quorums. And sometimes
you don't all have to be in the same room or in the same email chain. You could have one of your members talk to another member about something that you have authority or control over. Then that member goes to a third member and says, hey, I talked to this member and this is what we're thinking we might want to do about this. And that person goes to another member, and pretty soon you have a quorum. There's deliberation over something that you have control or authority over, and that's a walking quorum, and you violate the open meeting law. And again, the open meeting law is just intended to allow the public to hear your deliberation, to understand what it is that you're doing. And it's hard to do that if you're doing it in an email, not in an open forum that's been agendized to give them notice of what it is that you're going to be talking about. Again, any series of gatherings of members where less than a quorum is present, members attend one or more of the gatherings collectively with the intent to, to circumvent the open meeting law. Now, that's important because if you have intent to circumvent the open meeting law, that's when, if there is any kind of a complaint to the Attorney General who has authority over open meeting law complaints, that's when you would be fined, or there's different remedies for violating the open meeting law is if there's intent. So there is that intent. A lot of the times we don't intend to break the open meeting law. It just happens because we're just kind of thinking out loud. We're trying to get business done and we're communicating with everybody trying to get things done, but then we have to remember, oh, we need to do this in a public meeting. It needs to be agendized. The public has to have notice and an opportunity to show up and to have their feelings or their thoughts, heard. So the Attorney General has an open meeting law manual. It's online on their website. And it says that to the extent that a group is appointed by a public body, in your case, the Board of Supervisors, and is given a task of making decisions for recommendations for the public body, the group would be governed by the open meeting law. So no surprise, you guys aren't governed by the open meeting law. These are when the open meeting law applies also when the public body delegates de facto authority to a committee that committee stands in the shoes of the public body. So for example, if you decided to create a subcommittee, or if you appointed some individuals to carry out a task in your shoes, then they would be subject to the open meeting law. So you can't circumvent the open meeting law by, oh, we're going to go ahead and appoint like a subcommittee and let them do it and come back to us and tell us what it is that they want to do without it being subject to the open meeting law. Those individuals or that body that you create, like a subcommittee, would be subject to the open meeting law because they stand in your shoes. When does open meeting law not apply? There's different provisions that are provided for in Chapter 241 of the Nevada Revised Statutes, and that's the open meeting law. And in there, labor negotiations is another exemption to the open meeting law, and that's Chapter 288. But Chapter 241 talks about where it doesn't apply. So there's like typical internal agency staff meetings. One example would be like the city manager, has like a cabinet meeting. That's just a staff meeting. It's not subject to the open meeting law. Human resources may have may create some kind of a task force to look at its policies. That's not it's not subject to the open meeting law again because they're not appointed by a public body like the Board of Supervisors or a body like yourselves, and they're not, they're not subject to the open meeting law. They don't have to agendize it 3 days before the meeting. They don't have to have it recorded like we do here. So those are some examples of who's exempt from the open meeting law. Also, private briefings among staff of a public body, and a non-quorum of the members of the public body. So if somebody from staff talks to one or two of you at the same time, that's not a quorum. And so that would be exempt. Also, attorney briefings on it's got to be potential or existing litigation. So the city attorney may have that conversation with a quorum, but and it's something that you would have control over or jurisdiction over. But because that is exempt from the open meeting law, you would not, that would not be subject to the noticing and having it in public. And then social functions. This is a one that happens all the time. So, you know, you may have a quorum of your public body at a function, a social function. And that's okay so long as you stay away from talking about what you have authority and control over in your public capacity, and you don't deliberate, you know, towards a decision, then you're okay. So I think you're safe if you all go to a party and you talk about, you know, everything else but the rack stuff, then you'll be fine. And then seminars, conferences, conventions, and workshops. You can be, you know, say you all went to a seminar, a redevelopment, and that would be okay. You wouldn't have to agendize it and say that you're going to be at this meeting and provide notice to the public. That would be okay. Just you wouldn't, you know, you would have to stay away from deliberating or talking about the things that you have authority and power over. Appointment of designee or a proxy. Most public bodies cannot have a proxy or designee unless they're creating authority states specifically that they can have a proxy or an appointee to come in their place. And that person would have the same power and duty as the original member of the public body. Lee, do you know if they have, I don't think they have authority to have a proxy or a designee, right? Not very, not many do. Mm-mm. I think maybe I want to say maybe the health board or maybe the liquor board, but they don't have, they have no voting rights. And it's specifically spelled out. So that's not very common to have the authority of a designee or a proxy. And then this is more, you know, for staff, but you guys will recognize it and see it and maybe understand why we put certain things in the agenda. So there's a fundamental agenda rule, and that's to have a clear and complete statement of the topics to be considered at the meeting. So that's really important. We've had to cancel meetings sometimes because that, you know, the agenda title is not a clear and complete statement of what you're going to be talking about. And then that's why you have deputy district attorneys sitting at the table all the time to make sure that you stay within that clear and complete statement of what you're going to be acting on. And if you deviate from that, you might get in trouble and somebody might be watching and want to file a complaint against you with the Attorney General's office. So we always want to make sure that we don't deviate from that clear and complete statement and that it's on the agenda. So what we want is the public to be able to understand what it is that you're going to be voting on so that it's not something other than what it really is. It's got to be specific to alert the public. Action items have to be labeled with four possible action. If it doesn't have that four possible action, the body can't vote on it. And this is all in the law. We don't make this stuff up. And sometimes we get in trouble because we're sticklers about it, but it's just because we want to make sure that, you know, we protect the public bodies and that they don't get in trouble and get, you know, complaints filed against them. And if there is a mistake done or some inadvertent, not intentional action that violates the open meeting law, we can go back and correct it at the next meeting. The law allows us to do that. And so if we've done that, then at the next meeting we do for corrective action. So we haven't had to do that, so I think that's good. Let's see. And then it has to state, the agenda has to state that the items may be taken out of order and or the items may be combined or removed at any time. And again, this is for the public so that when they see the agenda and they say, oh, you know, they're going to vote on a tent, $5,000 for a tent today. Well, you know, I've been wanting to talk to them about that. I better show up. But it gives them notice that, you know, maybe it's not going to be the first item on the agenda. It may be trailed to the end. So they need to know that if they're going to show up for the meeting, it may not be the first thing on the agenda. It may be the last thing on the agenda, so they better plan and tell their bosses or tell their kids that, you know, they may be at the meeting all day long. So this is just to give people a heads up that just because an agenda item says that your item is going to be heard first, it doesn't mean it is. And to give the public body some flexibility, for example, if they expect somebody to come and speak on the agenda at a certain time and, you know, they're running late or maybe their airplane didn't get here or they broke down or whatever, the chairman can trail that item at a later time. So it just gives you some flexibility. Let's see, what else? This is really important. There has to be at least 2 public comment periods at every single public meeting. One at the beginning of the meeting and one at the very end. And that is the floor. And then the chairman may decide if after every agenda item, if he or she wants to have public comment, which we normally do, I think all of our public bodies, if there's, you know, members of the public or if it's an item that is controversial or of interest to the public, we usually do allow for public comment after every item. But at the very minimum, it's the beginning and at the end. And then also the most important part is that you have to have the restrictions. They've got to appear on the agenda. So if you're only going to allow 3 minutes of public comment, and if you have something that's really controversial, it's got to be on there. You're only going to allow them for 3 minutes. So that way the public, again, all of this is for the public. The public will have an opportunity to, if they have a speech, they can time it for 3 minutes because then they know they're only going to get 3 minutes. And then again, about the choice for your public comments, you can have, you know, just the beginning and the end, or you can have the beginning and then, and the, you know, you can have after every single after every single item. Let's see. Okay, and these are First Amendment items. This is just some cautions for, these are First Amendment rights, things that need to be thought about with public comment. The open meeting law and the First Amendment authorize the public body to restrict public speakers to subjects that it's within your supervision, your jurisdiction, advisory control. And we're really lucky here in Carson City that we really don't have that many, you know, gadflies that show up and just want to talk about anything that's bothering them that day or, you know, what have you. And the public body can limit those individuals to, you know, somebody comes in here and talks about, you know, I'm really mad that it's been, you know, that it snowed over the weekend and I just need to voice my opinion about that. You can tell them that, you know, we don't have any authority over the weather. If you have any comments about what's on the agenda today, you know, or even if you, they don't even have to comment on what's on the agenda, but so long as it's something that you have control and jurisdiction over, they can talk about that. You can limit their comment if their speech becomes irrelevant and repetitious. And you probably have often heard, chairman, if you have a really controversial issue that there may be 75 people that all want to have their voices heard, the chairman will usually manage that by saying, if it's going to be repetitious testimony, you know, a me too will suffice, and that way you don't have to sit there and listen to the same exact comment for 75 times. So you're allowed to do that. You can apply the reasonable time limitations. You just have to make sure you put that on the agenda. You can limit caustic personal attacks. It forbids a public body from limiting public comment based on disagreement with viewpoint of the speaker. That's one thing that, you know, you can't prohibit them from speaking out just because you don't agree with their viewpoint. And that goes, you know, to the Constitution and the First Amendment. Here's some things, some pitfalls, is stopping a citizen's comment based on your belief that defamation is occurring. Halting comment based on viewpoint of the speaker, again. Halting critical comment of a public official, believe it or not. So if they come here and they start going off on one of the public officials. I mean, it's First Amendment, you know, free speech. You can let them do that. To a point. I mean, if he or she starts repeating themselves, you can say, okay, we've already heard this, so you got two more minutes. But the comment can be stopped if it strays from the scope of the agenda topic or if an actual disturbance occurs, regardless of the topic. And that's a real fine line as far as when disruption is happening. If they're limiting you from getting the agenda done, then, you know, I would say that that's a disturbance. Actual disturbance, a person or persons who willfully disrupts a meeting to the extent that its orderly conduct has been made impractical, so you can't get through the agenda because this individual is being impossible and not letting you get through your business, then you can, you know, definitely stop them from testifying. And then removing an individual from a public meeting does not violate the Constitution, provided that the individual is sufficiently disruptive and is removed because of his or her, and is not removed because of his or her views. So that's the only caution there. And then just some penalties for open meeting law violation. Again, you have to have, you know, done it intentionally, violate the open meeting law. There's a fine for up to $500. There's a one-year limitations period for bringing an action. So if it happened over a year ago, then the Attorney General can't pursue it. The Attorney General is the public official in charge or with authority to pursue open meeting law prosecutions. And so again, the enforcement against somebody who violates the open meeting law is based on participation, and it can only occur when you make a commitment, promise, or cast an affirmative vote to take action on a matter under the public body's jurisdiction or control. When you knew that your commitment, promise, or vote was taken in violation of the law. Again, that goes towards the intent. You had to have had some intent in order to be guilty and fined or prosecuted. I mean, they can, you know, file the complaint, but the key is in whether or not you had some intent in violating the open meeting law, or you knew that what your action was going to do is violate the open meeting law. The remedies if a violation occurs, the Attorney General may seek to void action or seek injunctive relief. There's corrective action, and that's the one where you put on there for possible corrective action. There's private lawsuits, and then also the civil monetary fines or criminal misdemeanor. And you had to have, like, really intentionally, with malice, violated the open meeting law, you know, for criminal misdemeanor to apply. The civil monetary fines I've seen, misdemeanors, I rarely. And just remember that the open meeting law exists for the public's benefit and should be liberally construed and broadly interpreted to promote openness in government. That's it. If you guys have any questions, or if you want to download the open meeting law manual, it's full of all kinds of good advice. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so we'll move to agenda item 5 for discussion only. Staff reports, updates relating to RAC. Lee?
So the next regular meeting is first Monday in May. Just a reminder while we're not being recorded on TV. They forgot about us on TV, so nobody else is going to hear this. But we're taking a special, no, it's getting recorded, audio only. We're taking applications for special events. There's an April 15th deadline for that, so May is the time that any special event applications come into you. The budget, as you've recommended, the slowly decreasing special event budget will be at $25,000 for next year. I haven't had any contact yet as to who might be coming in, but we send it out to those that have applied before, but that'll be the only item I know of so far on the May agenda. May 7th.
Okay. Thanks, Lee. You covered two out of the three, so any RAC reports from members?
I don't have a RAC report, but I would like to have an agenda item for the next RAC meeting or afterwards, and that is to understand a little bit more about the carryover of funds. Like, for example, with the $5,000 that was just allocated today, we have $11,000 left over. So we have $25,000 of new funds. What happens to that $11,000 after June 30th?
It goes into the, it gets through augmentation finance. It becomes undesignated in the next year. That's assured. You know how we're looking at the spreadsheet last year, making the recommendations. As finance finals out the year, all those unused funds and extra revenues and other cost savings, they go into the undesignated account.
Okay, so it's no longer part of this at all.
It does so for special events, in particular, that goes away. Yeah, the unused goes away. Unused doesn't continue to get rolled forward. That's based on however we set up the program, however you want to do it. But yeah, right now for special events or street closures, most of those don't roll forward. The facade improvements, the same thing. We only rolled forward the stuff that was committed and unused, and the rest goes away and gets into undesignated.
So July 1, then we start with $25,000, and I guess what I'm also wondering is if there is a way to be able to sort of tell others that this fund, if there's anything left over, is available for another event. So,
yeah, and we're in the business license office, which is where you get special events, is in the same community development office that we have. So we do have people coming in. That's the place where people with special events go. I'll note that as new one comes in, but if you really think about it, you know, kind of the larger events, we've really had the same events come through every year right now that are becoming annual events. But that, you know, that's a conversation, and it's probably the Arts and Tourism, Arts and Culture Authority that has a person that goes out and seeking events, so it should probably get in contact with them and let them know. And I know they know about it too. But that's where the new bigger events are probably going to come from. But if they come, you know, we certainly know about it. If they come, ask us to identify it, let them know about it.
Okay, because I think one of the questions was if we have this $11,000 and Arts and Culture is always talking about the fact that they don't have enough money, could it have been rolled over to them for something? So, I mean, it just seems like we don't, at this particular point, $25,000 seems to be too much and could almost be rolled down.
Yeah, I think we're open to taking that recommendation. As probably a good time would be to see what applications and have that discussion during that. And if you feel, you know, in the past, as you mentioned earlier, some of that's been saved in case a new something comes up this year, we're going to save some funding, and then it didn't come up, so it gets rolled forward. But an alternative could be to see what you get and recommend that some of it get rolled into another category. That would be fine.
Well, it looks like our step down is working somewhat, since that used to be a little small portion of what we needed to give out, and now it seems like we have too much. So we're going in the right direction.
Yeah, I just think it needs a little bit more of a massage, if you will, or a little bit more of an explanation. I hate to have $11,000 go undesignated when it could go for something that would be of the benefit of the city, whatever comes up. So that's what I think maybe we should come up with. And if it could be an agenda item next time, that would be great.
This leads to a question in my mind. And you were talking earlier about the facade money being lower. Do you know of any other facades that are on the horizon before the end of the year or the fiscal year?
No, nobody else has contacted me.
Well, we probably won't have a problem with not enough. because you were just saying that the 21, there's still 3,000 or 4,000 there.
Yeah. Right. Theoretically, somebody could decide to do it now and come in and be under and want to be under construction before the end of June. But it's getting to where through the process of just scheduling meetings that somebody coming in now might likely start after July 1st anyway.
Especially if they need a contractor to do the work.
Exactly.
So just a question. So, but the money is not just limited or to facades, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I left this on. There is a line item budget that is assigned for facade improvements. So, there's a list of numerous things that redevelopment funds are used for, but there's a specific amount that's allocated to the facade improvements.
Because to Ronnie's point, you know, about monies left over are not allocated for a certain improvement or an item, and that's why I asked the question, because, you know, as I drive around this city, I mean, I certainly, and this may be something for the future agenda items that we might want to look at to add, but I definitely see some areas that we can look at, at least to have a conversation around, and how those dollars can be spent in order to serve those needs or those areas, you know, that I see. And one of those, since I'm speaking, would be I look at some of the parts of the city. It's very poor lightning. I mean, for us, the that to me that can become a safety issue, becomes a security issue. I don't know if this is something, Lee, that or Mr. Chair, that we will want to take up or entertain, but obviously being the new member of this board, I want to feel that we are not just pigeonhole or limiting ourselves of the money to be spent in one particular area. I mean, there can be things like, and I mention that because as I do drive around some parts of the city, I see lighting is very low visible, not enough lighting. I see, you know, in Carson Street or downtown, you have better quality lighting than other areas of the city. So this is something that may be or may not be something that we want to discuss or even that we are allowed to discuss. But I want to go ahead and just mention that as a member.
So lighting has actually been brought up in the past as possible funding for areas, although I don't think we've actually ever spent money on that. But one thing about what you're saying is actually the funds do have to be spent to the benefit of the redevelopment area, which is a pretty good portion of the city. If it's basically Carson Street from William Street all the way south now with two different districts, but that's the limit of the areas that could be looked at for those types of improvements. But that would be a valid improvement for safety and lighting.
I'd like to ask a question about reaching out to business owners. How does that process occur when you're talking about redevelopment and in the facade improvements? Do you go to individual businesses, or how does the staff handle that?
Yeah, and actually I had mentioned that in the past, and I've actually held off on doing another round of outreach programs. So I think when we initially started this, which is now a couple years ago, we reached out to the downtown businesses in particular and going down South Carson Street. There was a lot of communication going on back then. There hasn't been recently, but now that there's not funding, I'm not going to send out communication now, but actually that's something I'll probably do the next round is more proactively, because there was already people lined up to use the funds before. We didn't need to do that proactive approach. I think we could probably get a couple more if we do that, and I think that'll be the start of next year, is to send something out to the businesses. I have to think about that too, because I think it needs to be broad. Everybody needs to have an equal opportunity to use it. Probably if there's any particular businesses that we want to target too, because there's some, if you know of any that are out there that are in, could use some help on appearance more than others, you might want to mention it to them.
We're talking here about the facade money, right?
Facade.
Yeah. In terms of what Mike was saying, is there any thought that there might be outreach regarding that issue? lighting in the redevelopment areas. Just a thought.
Yeah.
You just don't want to open that can of worms?
No, I think, no, it's a good, if there's areas, I mean, I think that's why we go through this annual exercise of allocating funds for future projects to look at. Lights get pretty expensive, but there could be some funds carried over that become available through other savings and other places we don't save funds. But if they're, I mean, that's why we go through this annually with those last allocation plan recommendations. If you wanted to put some funds into a lighting program, we could work with Public Works to identify them. I could ask Public Works about that and bring a report back on lighting if there's any areas in redevelopment district where they're looking to add lighting.
I think we've concentrated so much on Carson Street alone, and a lot of the money that has been allocated for the street project has included lighting. So we have covered that. But I will tell you where it's still within the redevelopment area is some of the spots along Curry and Nevada Street. We could go depth-wise instead of linear. We could just go further back to address your concerns. But again, the redevelopment area is what this money is coming from. So
that's where it goes.
I think, Lee, I think that's a great idea, as long as we keep it within the confines of redevelopment, to come back with that as a possible item, lighting, because it doesn't fall under the facade necessarily.
Yeah, you're talking about street light, walking down the street, and it's the public light, yeah.
Anything else? Okay, I'm now opening up to our wonderful public comment at the end of the meeting. Per our open meeting law. I don't think anyone's out there, so we'll move on to 7, adjournment. Adjourn?
Before we adjourn, Mr. Chairman, I mean, Ronnie took the honor of having me to introduce myself as a new member of the last meeting. I think it would be very appropriate if we were here from our newest member, Ms. Sherry Powell. Something
Good
about
point.
Her, if we would, please.
Thank
Mr.
you.
Chair?
Excellent point, Chairman.
Thank you. I kind of had a feeling that was going to happen. So during my interview, I had to explain to everybody that, unfortunately, I do come from UNLV, so I'm sorry. I bleed red, not blue. But down in Las Vegas, I was part of the environmental planning and redevelopment of the city of Las Vegas downtown area. And while I went to UNLV, that's what we did. We got support from our city council members. We got support from communities and businesses, community members, businesses. And we helped develop the downtown arts district. And we subsidized artists' housing so that they were able to earn more income and live in that downtown area. Our only requirement was that they had to show their art every first Friday, and first Fridays down in downtown city of Las Vegas are really big now. There's outdoor concerts and food vendors and street art, and the streets are closed off. And I saw an entire debilitated area rehabilitated, and it has often just given me so much pride. So when I came to Carson City and I saw some of those areas, I've only been here 2 years, I was determined that I wanted to be a part of it. And I bought a house on the west side. I work for the state of Nevada. And I've been remodeling my house ever since and being as much a part of my community as I could be. So it's a pleasure to work with you all and a pleasure to serve.
Excellent. Welcome aboard. Glad to have you. Thank you. Okay, now for adjournment.
Mr. Chair, I can make a motion that the meeting be adjourned at this time.
Okay.
Okay. Meeting adjourned.